Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Donald Ray Pollock. Don, welcome.
Hi, Vic. I appreciate you having me on.
Don, your novel, The Devil All the Time, just came out in paperback. And last time I talked to you, it was just about ready to come out in hardcover. Now you've had all this time to have the book out. What's it been like for you?
Well, the response has been, extremely good. At least, for me, it's been a great, time. At least the reviews were more than I could have hoped for, as far as being good. And done quite a bit of traveling. Everything's been great. I've been very fortunate.
Well, I remember when I talked to you right before it came out, you were really nervous.
Yeah. Well, I assume that most writers get really nervous right before the book comes out, I didn't know if, as far as it, I went from short stories to a novel, and, I knew that it was a pretty dark book, so I wasn't sure how people would take it, but, the response has been positive, so.
Yeah. And you're still living in Chillicothe?
Still in Chillicothe.
Mm-hmm.
We did move. We bought a house on the other side of the hill from where we lived, and so that has kept me busy the last 3 or 4 months, getting this other house, ready to move in and then moving. I mean, we had lived at the old house for over 20 years, and it was hard to believe how much stuff we had accumulated.
Uh-huh. So. That was over on, was it Rose Lane?
Was it? Yeah, it was uh-huh. Rose Lane, and now I'm on Mead Drive.
Uh-huh. So was the top priority having a really nice attic in this new house?
No, actually, the new house doesn't have a nice attic. But they did, there was a sort of like a garden shed in the backyard, which I've transformed into an office.
Oh. Well, that first book, Knock 'Em Stiff, came out several years ago. That was your first book, your collection of short stories. And that really kind of began with the story you wrote called Bactine, didn't it?
Yes.
Tell our listeners about the journey. We've had you on this program several times before, but some of our listeners haven't heard about that. Tell us about the journey you took to get to that story.
I'm 57 now. When I was 45, I'd been working at a paper mill, at the Mead paper mill, actually, for around 27 years. And I decided I wanted to try to do something else with the rest of my life. And so my decision was to become a writer, to at least learn how to write short stories. So I floundered around for quite a while, pretty much mimicking other writers, like John Cheever and Richard Yates and Hemingway and, a lot of other great writers. And I just wasn't getting anywhere. And then I probably was close to 2 years into it, and I wrote this little story called Bactine, which, I mean, really nothing much happens in the story, but it's about two losers in a donut shop set in southern Ohio. And I realized when I finished that it was the best thing that I'd ever done. I sort of had this, I don't know if it was an epiphany or whatever, that I needed to write about the sorts of people that I had met and that I knew and had heard about, and also to set my stuff in southern Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty much from then on out, I started focusing on that.
So I hate to use this because it sounds like a cliche, but in that story, you sort of found your voice.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think, if anything, if I didn't figure out anything else, I did find my voice with that story.
Donald Ray Pollock joins us. His novel, The Devil All the Time, just came out in paperback. And if you're listening to this interview on Friday, July 27th, Don is going to be in Xenia tonight for a book signing at 6 o'clock. From 6 until 8, he'll be at Blue Jacket Books at 60 South Detroit Street in Xenia. You can meet him. He'll be signing copies of the paperback of The Devil All the Time. Knock 'em Stiff, that first collection of short stories, a lot of that was inspired by your childhood, wasn't it? Tell us about that little community where you came from.
Well, I grew up in a place called Knock 'em Stiff, and it's about 14 miles west of Chillicothe, you know, where I live now. Knock 'em Stiff was just this little community sort of set in a, well, what I call a holler, you know, a hollow. There were hills surrounding it, and there were approximately 450 people living there back in the 1950s and the 60s. I was probably related to half of those people. There were three small general stores and a bar and a church. So, you know, I mean, it was a place where you could pretty much get by without ever going to, you know, without ever leaving it, without ever going to town or anything like that. And, you know, and I lived there all the time I was growing up. So it did have, you know, I guess, you know, it had a major influence on, you know, especially my writing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's been a major influence, I guess, on my whole life. My parents still live there. And, you know, it's not the community that it used to be. It's pretty much become, you know, you could drive through there now, you'd never know you'd been in Knock 'em Stiff.
Mm.
So it's sort of like a pseudo ghost town, I guess, now.
And Knock 'em Stiff is also in this new book. You mastered the short story form in Knock 'em Stiff, and then you decided you were going to write a full novel. And that was a challenge for you, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was, you know, if you look up my stories, most of them range anywhere from, say, 8 to 14 pages. And I'm, you know, when I revise, I'm always cutting words, you know. I mean, I'll go over something for an entire day and maybe just cut two or three words, and maybe that's all I get done. But I'm very focused on making it as spare and as as complete as I can with as few words as possible. So, you know, then looking at, God, writing a story, you know, that's going to run on for 250, 300 pages, that was very intimidating. And it took me a long time to figure out, you know, how to do it and, you know, to actually, you know, achieve something that looked like a novel. You know, it was a couple years working on that.
Because when you're cutting it down to the bone, and yet it's going to be 250 pages long, that's tough, isn't it?
Well, the thing that I had to do with the novel was, you know, with the short stories, pretty much I wrote those sentence by sentence. You know, I started with the first sentence, and I just worked very carefully on each sentence, you know, and sort of like a procession. And with the novel, I realized there was no way I'd be able to do that. It would take me 10 or 15 years to write a book. So I wrote this very loose, fast draft that took me 3 or 4 months, and I never looked back. You know, I just wrote it, and it was a mess and sloppy, and pretty much I was the only one I could figure out what the hell was going on with that.
Uh-huh.
But after I got something down on paper, then I could, you know, start working on it seriously. I mean, as far as the revisions go and stuff. And the only way that I could figure out how to do it was to write that really fast, loose draft.
So you kind of stepped outside of your comfort zone to make that draft, and then you had something that you could go back. It was like a big old rock, and you could start sculpting it a little bit. And
yeah.
I remember talking to you when you had Knock 'Em Stiff, when it first came out. We had you on the show. In fact, really before the book even came out, we interviewed you. And at the time, you had this sort of nugget in your mind about writing a novel about serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that a little bit. And then when we interviewed you the first time for this novel, you talked about that process and how you decided, well, you know, I just can't make it about these serial killers, Carl and Sandy Henderson. There's got to be something else.
Yeah, it's sort of after I had worked with Carl and Sandy for quite a while, I realized that, you know, even though all of my stuff is dark, I wasn't sure that people would want to read a 250-page novel just about two serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had this other character that I'd been working with, and that was Arvin. And so I made, you know, with Arvin, I took him back a few, I made him younger, and dealt, you know, some with his childhood. And I worked with that for a while, and then I decided, okay, it's got to be, what I've got to do here is try to come up with a coming-of-age / serial killer story.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the people to do that with. I guess the hardest thing for me was, because the novel spans a course of 20 years, and there are about three or four storylines running through it, was how to tell the story so that it made sense to the reader.
Uh-huh.
And that took me a good part of that time, you know, that 2 years, was just trying to figure that out.
Just getting the continuity. Arvin,
yes.
Arvin Eugene Russell, he really is the character who threads through this story and kind of ties it all together. And you and I are about the same age, and I don't know about your dad, but my dad was a World War II vet, and growing up, we knew a lot of people who were in that war, and a lot of them saw things they didn't want to see, and Arvin's dad is one of those.
Yes. My dad, he was in the Korean War. And, you know, there's something about war, I guess, that sort of fascinates me. I mean, I know that it sounds weird to even say that, but especially World War One, I am sort of almost obsessed with reading about that war. Guys that I worked with at the paper mill and people that lived in Knock 'Em Stiff who'd been in World War Two and the Korean conflict. So I was around a lot of people who had experienced that. Well, and the Vietnam War, too, later on.
Uh-huh.
War is just such it's such a strange thing that causes so much pain and destruction and doesn't really probably ever need to happen. Uh-huh. But we keep doing it.
Yeah. My guest is Donald Ray Pollock. His novel, The Devil All the Time, just came out in paperback. You just mentioned World War One. I feel the same way about World War One. I want to know more about it. And my grandfather was in the Marine Corps in France in World War One. And one of my great regrets is that I never really talked to him about that very much. And now a day goes by rarely when I don't think, gee, I wished I'd asked Amos what that was like.
Vets are all gone now, you know.
They're all gone. The last one, finally, in the last year.
Yeah.
That whole generation.
Yep.
And World War II, the vets are going fast, too. Let's give our readers a little capsule shot of some of the stuff we've got going on in The Devil All the Time, without giving away too much.
You know, we start out with Arvin's father returning from the war. You know, he meets a girl on his way home. He lives in southern West Virginia, and he returns to Ohio and he marries her. He has a they have Arvin, And so that is part of the story, is Arvin growing up with this man who has, he's got problems, trauma from the war. And he's also, he's got this strange religious thing going on later. Then we have the two serial killers who live in the town close to Knock'em Stiff, which I call Mead, which is just a fictional name for Chillicothe.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that, we have a corrupt sheriff and a couple itinerant preachers from West Virginia who are running from the law from a crime that they committed. And so, the book is divided up into these seven sections, and I try to deal with, the different time elements there by doing that. And, I know that it doesn't sound like it makes a whole lot of sense, especially when I go to a bookstore and I read, because I'll read from a couple different sections, and, I figure most people can't see how that's going to fit together, but everything does fall into place towards the end of the book. And, as I mentioned before, I sort of tried to make it a coming-of-age story dealing with Arvin and then this this other sort of crime story that's going on through the book. I'm not sure how well it worked, but most people, like that sort of thing. Now, there's a lot of people aren't going to like my work because it is so gritty and violent and so forth. But for those people who like that kind of stuff, I think that it works pretty well.
Well, clearly there are some people who like it because people are reading your stuff. I know you've got some hardcore fans, and I'm sure some of them are going to come out and see you. For those of you listening to this interview on Friday, July 27th, Donald Ray Pollock will be at Blue Jacket Books tonight. If you're listening on Friday night, July 27th, at 60 South Detroit Street in Xenia from 6 until 8 o'clock, and are you going to read some excerpts from the book?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much what I'll do. I might read one or two things, other little things that I've written, but primarily I'll be reading from the book.
Uh-huh. And when we read this book and we come upon Carl and Sandy Henderson, the serial killers, I came away feeling a little bit sympathetic with her, even though she's really not a very sympathetic character. But the main reason I think I sympathize with her is because she's with Carl, and Carl has got to be about the most horrid person I think I've ever read about, ever, in any book. Carl is just a sicko.
Yeah, he is.
How did you imagine Carl? Did you read about people like this? I mean, where did this guy come from?
Well, I did do some research on serial killers when I first started, and that wasn't a lot. Of course, we hear in the news, we read in the news, every once in a while there's a serial killer story.
Uh-huh.
But I did read four or five books about mass murderers or serial killers. And I was doing okay until I read this book about John Wayne Gacy. Uh-huh. And it was called Buried Dreams by a nonfiction writer. His name's Tim Cahill. And I read that book and, gee, I'll tell you what. I mean, I write some pretty rough stuff, but that book gave me nightmares. And so I decided then that, okay, it's pretty much, I know enough about these people and how they operate and everything that I just have to, I've got to come up with my own.
Yeah.
And so I can't really explain how I came up with Carl. Pretty much, I can't really explain where any of this stuff comes from, really.
Mm.
I just kept working with them, and I do think that most readers should be able to have a little bit of maybe empathy or whatever for Sandy. You know, at least I hope they do. Because I tend to be very, not extremely sympathetic, I guess, but I tend to try to empathize with people who end up like that. Because I know there's always probably a story that we're not hearing about, you know, I mean, how they were raised or, you know, what kind of circumstances they grew up in or whatever that made them like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think everybody, you know, has, or at least should be able to empathize with her a little.
And you just never know because, well, in the case of John Wayne Gacy, you just never know. Is that person down there at the edge of the photo that I'm in, is that person that years later you find out did these horrible things? We have that famous photo of John Wayne Gacy, who was involved with Democratic political activities in Cook County, Illinois, and there's a photo of him. I think he's dressed as a clown, and he's with,
yeah,
Rosalind Carter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an eerie thing to think that they were in the same room together.
Right, right. Yes, it is. And, you know, and there's a lot of things that I suppose can't be explained about people who commit crimes like that. But, you know, I don't try to, you know, explain Carl or too much or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I'm sure that most of these people, something really awful had to happen to them at some time.
Yeah. And there's something inevitable. There's this relentless feeling as we're getting deeper into the novel. We know that all these threads are going to somehow converge, or a lot of them, and that there's going to be some terrible reckoning that occurs, and we can feel it. And when it inevitably comes approaching like a mile marker on the highway, we just go, oh my. Oh my, what's going to happen now? And then we have these kind of peripheral characters like Roy and Theodore. I mean, these are some more creepy people.
Yeah. Yeah, well, some people ask me, you know, where did all these characters come from, you know, because they are, most of them are pretty creepy.
Uh-huh.
You know, again, I have to say that I really don't know. I mean, you know, I'm actually a pretty nice guy. And, you know, it's not like, you know, I've had people who told me later after they met me that they were a little concerned, you know, about, you know, getting together with me or whatever. And I can't explain it, but I'm, you know, it's sort of like, I don't know, you know, some horror fiction writer or something, you know, like Stephen King or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I don't know if he can explain where his ideas come from, but he seems like a pretty decent person.
Uh-huh. Well, now, Don, now that you've been doing this for a while, I look at a lot of books and try to decide which ones I want to read, and I've noticed just the last few years that you've been picking out a few books yourself that you've been willing to write blurbs for. And if I see you've written a blurb, that always makes me want to read the book. And I know that you don't give out those blurbs very freely, that you really have to like the book. What's that been like to be approached and to be asked to give your thoughts about a book like that?
You know, there's a couple things there that are going on. One is that, yeah, I mean, I want to, you know, if somebody asks me to look at their book and blurb it or whatever, I do get quite a few requests now.
Uh-huh.
For that, which makes me feel good, you know, because people are actually wanting me to, my name on their back of their book or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So I tend to approach the book, you know, at trying to at least see, you know, even if the story is not quite my cup of tea or whatever, trying to see the positive elements in the story and just everything that I've really, I think, been sent, you know, I've been able to do that with.
Uh-huh.
And then another thing is most of the books that I'm asked to blurb are first books. You know, it's the writer's first book. And I know how tough it is out there to get, you know, someone to endorse your book or, you know, your stuff. I mean, it can be really tough because, you know, not that writers aren't willing to do it, but that there is only so much time in the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're being asked all the time to blurb, well, that takes up a lot of your own reading time.
Sure.
So, you know, it's been great, you know, don't get me wrong. It's great to be asked, but sometimes, it does feel almost a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
But I'm one of those guys, I hate to say no because, you know, like I said, I know how it is. And so, you know, I try, especially with writers and it's their first book, I try to, you know, my best to try to support them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Don, it's always a pleasure having you on the program.
Hey, thanks a lot, Vic. I really appreciate it.
Our guest has been Donald Ray Pollock. His novel, The Devil All the Time, just came out in paperback. If you're listening to this interview on Friday, July 27th, you can meet Don tonight. He'll be doing a book signing in Xenia at Blue Jacket Books, 60 South Detroit Street. That's tonight at 6 o'clock. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. Let's get one thing straight. I was the perfect man for this case. You'd be amazed how many of the lads would have run a mile, given the choice. And I had a choice, at least at the start. A couple of them said it to my face. Sooner you than me, man. It didn't bother me, not for a second. All I felt was sorry for them. Some of them aren't wild about the high-profile gigs, the high-stakes ones. Too much media crap, they say, and too much fallout if you don't get a solve. I don't do that kind of negativity. If you put your energy into thinking about how much the fall would hurt, you're already halfway down. I focus on the positive, and there's plenty of positive there. You can pretend you're above this stuff, but everyone knows the big cases are the ones that bring the big promotions. Give me the headline grabbers, and you can keep your drug dealer stabbings. If you can't take the heat, stay in uniform. That is the voice of Detective Mick Scorcher Kennedy. He's the protagonist of Faithful Place, the new novel by Tana French. Join us next week in the Book Nook as we talk to Tana French about her latest book featuring the Dublin Murder Squad in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.